Hello, this is the 26th episode in the Creative Flow podcast series. Hosted by Anthony Bellani and Kim Marie McKernan, it features discussions with thinkers and change agents important to the science of creativity.
We would like to welcome Tamara L. McMillan, MS, an award-winning lecturer, author, and TEDx speaker with 18 combined years of public speaking, corporate, and higher education experience. She is the Chief Empowerment Officer at Empower Me and is known for her failure fanatic framework. She earned an MS in Student Personnel Administration and an Advanced Certificate of Studies in Creativity and Change Leadership at the State University of New York College at Buffalo, where she has been an adjunct lecturer for 13 years. Tamara is working on her dissertation for the PhD in Creative Leadership for Innovation and Change from the University of the Virgin Islands. Welcome, Tamara.
Hello, hello. Thank you so much, Tony and Kim, for having me.
Well, we're glad you're here. Please share the story of how you became involved in deliberate creativity.
Probably would say how I got involved with being creative deliberately through my actual studies and the connection through the actual department and the courses and my close connection with none other than the gold standard, Dr. Roger Feierstein himself.
What was it that brought you into the first course, the first experiences?
My sister. So my sister had taken a course. Both of my sisters are special education specialists, also trained out of Buffalo State College, which was known as a teacher's school at that particular time. And Tasha had taken an elective with Roger Feierstein, and it was basically about this whole idea of, you know, being creative and doing it deliberately. And she was like, "You have to take this course with this man," because it was excellent. And I looked into it, and how does they say, the rest is history.
That's great. You know, you have a fascinating background as you specialize in using creativity in academic and business context. Can you describe one or two of your favorite success stories resulting from your work?
As a conduit, especially in the space, as a professor, an adjunct professor, I believe that there's a sacred relationship between a professor and their scholars. I call my student scholars, because I want them to know that they can be, again, dynamic and brilliant because they can do it deliberately through certain trainings and experiences. And there was this one scholar who found herself in one of my classes, the Foundation of Leadership, CRS 201. And she was there taking in all of the notes, getting all of the evening enhancement, because I don't call it homework. And then she was comparing notes, right? She was like, "Well, wait a minute, I'm going on Blackboard and it doesn't seem that my information is in alignment." Well, come to find out, the class that she was supposed to be in switched rooms. So she ended up in CRS 201 and didn't really uncover that until maybe 2 or 3 weeks in, drop ad had ended. However, the thing that was most beautiful about that was she said, "I need to stay in this class. I need to stay with you because there's something here that I need to do." And as a result, she ended her undergraduate experience, then got into the master's program and just completed her capstone program with Dr. Puccio and shared the story. And he called me, he said, "I want to tell you, the students are still talking about you." So that's probably one of the most dynamic experiences about being deliberate creatively and then how it shows up and how it showed up in my life.
Yes, you also use it in your work. Do you have any favorite examples in your work?
I think probably my most favorite, when we're really pulling back the layers to understand deliberate creativity, is when I used it on myself. And I was in higher education, associate director for leadership. We got a new director, and I was asked, what did I like most about the position? And I said, teaching, being in the classroom. And the The director didn't understand my enthusiasm and or the impact that I wanted to continue to have. And thus, she made the decision to write it out of my job description because she didn't see the connection. And I used my deliberate creativity, the fact that I could have this theory in practice and use it as a way to move me forward. And I came up with this kick-ass outline on how I was going to continuously be deliberate about my life. And I was not going to allow anyone else to paddle my canoe or narrate my story. And I ended up resigning after having permanent appointment with the state of New York. You know, all of the bells and whistles, vacation, health insurance. My daughter was a freshman, sophomore into college. And what I realized in that particular moment was that I wasn't looking for security. I was looking for freedom, and being deliberate about who I am was the impetus to that. It was the conduit. It was the space.
And I think using it ourselves is what we're all striving for, that it becomes a way of life, right?
I agree.
It's such a powerful example of creativity in action. And I couldn't hear a story that's any more personal. Mm. Tell us more about your work with the Failure Fanaticism Framework.
Wow.
How might our listeners use it in their lives?
Well, I'll go with the latter first. How they can use it in their lives is just understand that you will pass failure. They will pass failure on their way to success. It's my belief in terms of understanding this framework and being able to use it inside of not only the classroom, but inside my business, is that if you're not failing, you're probably not doing anything worth mentioning, and which means you're probably playing it safe. And guess what? Life isn't worth playing it safe because there's too much to do. There's so much fun to be had. The failure fanaticism was really my way of, again, tapping into being deliberate and utilizing all the things that I thought were meant to bring me down, were meant to disassociate me from who it is that I am and what I was supposed to be doing. And I turned it on its ear and I use it for positive. So I'm using it in a way that is empowering and not disempowering. I felt second grade. I had reading comprehension problems, all of these things that are so-called, you know, deemed failure. Failure receives a bad rap in society, and I want to be part of the conversation to change it. So hence, you should all be failure fanatics.
What would you say are the elements of the framework?
The elements of the framework is first and foremost temetnosis. I love philosophy, and it is actually Socrates, thyself thou must know. In order for us to be deliberate about anything in our life, you have to understand who you are, all of the things that you've experienced, your education and your expertise, that makes you up who you are. And then when you understand that, you will then understand that there are going to be some things that you're going to get wrong, i.e. you're going to fail at some things, but you're not your failure. And when you understand that, you're looking for it as a way to what? Elevate, scale, and leverage.
As I'm sure you're aware with your own research in this area, that failure became kind of a fashionable thing in Silicon Valley, and with people holding sort of failure hackathons and
Yes.
What's your take on that? And did they get it right? Or was there things about it that seemed like they missed some interesting points? Or what would you say about what happened out there?
Well, first and foremost, I'm going to lean to our idea and our guidelines. I'm deferring judgment. I don't know if I would say that if they got some things wrong. What I will say is what they did get right was the fact that they understood that in order for them to be pushing the envelope, we're talking about Silicon Valley, that is the hub for anything that's new and novel in the tech space, in the tech world. And the fact that they are having now these failure fanatic days, they're having a day of failure, is absolutely right. When you think about Google and how they gave their employees, I believe it was a Friday, like every other Friday, and they gave them an hour and a half to do anything. And that's how we got Gmail. So I believe absolutely that's one of the things that we need to be leaning more in. And I write about it actually in my dissertation proposal, how Silicon Valley actually, you know, champions and celebrates failure, but Wall Street's frown upon it. We have to begin changing that conversation.
Obtaining a PhD in creativity shows a depth of commitment to the field. Can you share your perspective on why creativity is essential today and in the future?
I would say creativity is essential today and the future, and creativity has always been essential. I think we haven't been, again, having the open and honest conversations about what creativity is when we've all gone through the actual degree, the program, the classes. It's not some mystical, magical thing that is potions and lotions and snake oil, as the great Naja Bowden would say. Creativity is essential because it allows everybody to show up as their authentic self, and they don't need to subscribe to these ideals in society and the way in which we've been socialized to believe that if I'm not doing it the way Tony's doing it or Kim's doing or Naja or Gerard Puccio or Roger Firestein, that there's something innately wrong with me. Creativity holds a space for everybody at the table. So that's why it was always important. That's why it's important now, and it will continue to be important, especially as we look at the changing face of America and in the world and globally. And not only that, creativity makes our world even smaller.
And how do you see, we're all here with that kind of training, mm-hmm. but from your perspective, and I love your perspective of we all have an approach to creativity, and all of them are yes ands. They all fit. Mm-hmm. So from your point of view and your years of experience, how do you see carrying that same energy out to the rest of the world?
I see carrying it by just doing that, being my authentic, my creative self, by intersecting in spaces where they might not see a Black woman, right? So for those of your listeners who don't know or might not be able to tell from, again, my diction and clarity and voice, I am a Black woman that came from the east side of Buffalo from a so-called broken, family. My parents divorced when I was young, and my mother, we were on social services. So that's how I begin carrying it, by letting people know that yes, and you too.
The thought that came to me while you were talking was walk the walk, but you also carry a lovely energy along with that that I'm sure is inspirational to the scholars and all the other people you come in contact with. So you also have a book, and it's not only published, but it also has a second edition. It's titled Liberation Now. Tell us about the book and how it connects to your journey in creativity.
So the book was really a private, not so much, love letter to myself. It was a love letter to my younger self. The girl who kept moving, even though she didn't have all the tools, she didn't have all of the answers. And so now all of the individuals that get an opportunity to experience me can because of her. So Liberation Now is really about honoring, again, who we are innately and not running from that and embracing it. And the first chapter, just like when individuals come into the classroom that I teach, and when individuals come into the tribe, and individuals come into spaces where I am practicing my creativity deliberately, we always start with "Temetno says thyself, thou must know." And I think that's where a lot of people are missing the mark and living unhappy lives and just moving around mindlessly because they're not paying attention to who they are and honoring it. So that's Liberation Now, 5 Steps to Begin Realizing Your Dreams.
I've had the privilege of reading it, and it's very powerful. I'd love to learn more about your business, Empower Me. Mm-hmm. Can you share a little bit more about your business and your tribe?
Yeah, oh my goodness, thank you. So Empower Me, at its heart, we have an affinity for women. We believe that females are the future. However, we also believe that the only way in which we can be the present is if we are bowed together. And being bowed together means creating this amazing space, a container, where women, diverse women from different backgrounds, socioeconomic backgrounds, sexual orientation, religion, you name it, can come together and guess what, try their boldness on, and they can have the benefit of different perspectives, different lenses, different layers, different ideas as other women are playing interference for them as they what navigate what's next in their life. So we have this dynamic tribe called Bold Together, where we do just that for, again, the women who is what, an active practitioner in her life. She's an abundant thinker, and she believes that collaboration is the new competition. That's one of the arms then, as a conduit, as a consultant, I do one-on-one consultancy with my clients. I allow them to pick my brain as an advanced trainer for foresight. I am a high ideator and implementer, so they get an opportunity to sit at my feet. I get an opportunity to sit at their feet, and we come up with some really dynamic ways for them to get unstuck, to move forward toward those things that sparkle at them. And then I'm also a speaker, so individuals, you know, contract me to do keynotes, luncheons, and I also do trainings as well in the space of creativity, also in the space of foresight, MBTI, strong interest inventory, and also seven habits for highly effective people. So I use my voice as my vehicle, and again, do it deliberately in ways that allow individuals to just show up as they are and help them move the needle in ways that are effective and efficient for whatever their mission and vision is.
I love how many ways you're using deliberate creativity. You rock. It's amazing.
Thank you. You're too kind. People are like, oh my goodness. And you're doing a lot. And I go, well, but you know, and that's the whole idea of being deliberate. When you understand, again, Temeto says, when you understand who you are, nothing or no one can corrupt that. So it's all within my wheelhouse. And it works because it's seamless. It's me, and again, infusing my training, my craft, in ways that allow other people to see themselves, because that's one of the, another beautiful thing about the tribe and what we offer. Some women have never even met themselves before. This gives them the opportunity to meet themselves sometimes for the very first time, or to be reintroduced to them.
It sounds to our listeners probably like you're doing all these different things, but I'm getting the feeling that to you, it's all just one thing done many different ways.
Absolutely. Thank you, Anthony. It really is, right? It really is. But, and also that's the beauty of understanding how to be creative deliberately. I can be deliberate in all of these spaces because I understand the magic, understand me, because I've, again, bet on me. I understood that while my story wasn't something to be ashamed of, it wasn't something to run from, it was actually something to highlight and to illuminate. So then that way the individuals that are coming behind me, those individuals that are in front of me or on the side of me, they could then understand that this is not a space where you're supposed to turn your light down, you're supposed to turn it up, because we're off frequency at the end of the day.
It's all just data at some point.
Exactly.
And used and morphed and changed and turned into something fresh and new.
Alchemy. Yes.
We always love to ask our speakers about their creative flow. So please share what yours is.
You know, I thought about that. And as simplistic and I don't know, maybe even shallow as it may sound, my creative flow is trusting me with me. As my nephew would say, ta-da, it's magic, yeah. Right?
Well, I'm gonna say one thing and then I'm gonna ask you another question, so get ready. I couldn't think of anything less shallow, first of all. So give us an example. Where have you trusted yourself with you recently, or one time maybe when you surprised yourself?
I would say, again, with the way in which I show up deliberately, creatively. So after being associate director and moving away from that position, because I'm not interested in changing anyone's worldview on creativity or even myself in terms where I'm forcing it. We only push on open doors, right? So I ended up being the director for C-STEP, which is a STEM program for talented Black and Brown scholars at the collegiate level. And that position ended, and I was at an impasse, quite frankly, Anthony and Kim, and what to do next. And I felt like, you know what, maybe I've done everything that I needed to do. So how did I pick myself? I sold my home, going to offer 9 days. And I relocated and I moved in with my baby sister. Right? So when you're thinking about success and how society tells us what success looks like, my sister should be living with me or I shouldn't be living with anyone else. But it's cooperative economics. It is thinking, again, not less of yourself, but thinking less of, you know, less of yourself, right? And understanding that there was so much more for me to do, but I was still figuring it out in a new space. And trusting me with me was trusting that because I have this skill, this craft that I love, that I would land on my feet no matter where I ended. So that's an example.
That's beautiful. Thank you for listening. This is Kimberly McKernan.
And Anthony Bellani.
We invite you to tune in again to the Creative Flow series. We hope you will translate your creative flow into action and that your actions change the world.